Rabbeinu Yoina ben Avram of Gerona, it was also known as Rabbeinu Yoina HaChosid. As was mentioned a number of times, that he was a relative and a colleague and a very close friend of the Ramban. We already discussed the differences of opinion that the Chidah brings down, that some considered that Rabbeinu Yoina might have been a Talmud of Ramban, and the Chidah rejected that. And that is basically the consensus of most opinions. He was, as we say, a colleague of the Ramban. They were first cousins. And also there were Mechutonim. So Rabbeinu Yoina, by the way, had a number of Rabbeim. Among them, first of all, as we mentioned once, was Rabbeinu Shlomo Minohar. That was a friend of Montpellier, that was called Minohar, who basically, as we know, he stood at the forefront, which was called at that time the anti-Maimonists. Those who were against the Rambam. They were known as the anti-Maimonists, and the one who stood at the forefront of the anti-Maimonists was Rabbeinu Shlomo Minohar, which basically was the great Maimonidean controversy. And among Rabbeinu Yoina's other Rabbeim were the 13th century, the French Balatoises. And namely, these are not familiar, by the way, we don't have much writing from them, but nonetheless, the Balatoises that Rabbeinu Yoina was learning by was one by the name of Rabbeinu Moshe ben Schneer, which is brought down in the Shalos HaTshuvos Maharaj Dam, who mentions this, that Rabbeinu Yoina was a Talmud of Rabbeinu Moshe ben Schneer, and also Rabbeinu Shmuel ben Schneer of Evro. So it comes out that, as we pointed out once, that Rabbeinu Yoina combined two sources of Derech HaLimuds, the pilpul of the Balatoises, and also the type of style, different style of learning, which was from Rabbeinu Shlomo Minohar, which was the Provençal school, and also at the same time the Tosfos school of Derech HaLimud and Torah study. Just like Rambam, Rabbeinu Yoina was regarded and was revered as being one of the greatest leaders of Sephardic Jewry in his generation. Now, as we mentioned, and here I want to quote something, that being that Rabbeinu Yoina was a Talmud of Rabbeinu Shlomo Minohar, who stood at the forefront of the Maimonidean controversy, so together with another colleague, again someone not very well known, but talking about Rishonim over here, was the name about Rabbeinu David ben Shmuel. They both became very deeply enmeshed in the great controversy against the Rambam. And like his teacher, like his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Shlomo Minohar, Rabbeinu Yoina stood at the forefront of the anti-Maimonist camp, and which regarded, by the way, what the idea was, the anti-Maimonist camp regarded two Svarim of the Rambam with something that they opposed. Number one, which was the first Sefer of the Rambams in the Yod HaChazaka, which is the Sefer HaMada. If you go through the Rambams, Yod HaChazaka, the Sefer HaMada, there he talks about not as later on Haloche, as the Rambam goes through, of course, being a major Sefer of Haloche, but Sefer HaMada, he talks about Hashkofe. There's a lot of philosophy and a lot of different ideas. And regarding the Sefer HaMada, and as well as the Sefer of the Moir Nevuchim, which is the Guide of the Perplexed, they consider it to be heretical, no less. And therefore they stood against it, very much opposed it. And you have to realize, I mean, it's hard to describe, you know, how fierce that Machloikis was. It was regarded, it was so relentless to the point that it actually threatened to tear down the Jewish people asunder. It was such a fierce, fierce Machloikis. It turned out that one band provoked a contraband, so they had a cherem on this side, and this other side imposing a cherem on the other side. So it means, as one can very much say, if you would have been there, you would have been in a cherem. Because no matter which side you were on, you would have been in a cherem. The other side put you in a cherem, and the other side put the others in a cherem. So no matter which side you were, if you would have been there, you would have been in a cherem. And then a terrible thing happened, which basically, it went out of control, as we pointed out, entirely. And then it happened is that someone in the anti-Maimonist camp submitted manuscripts of the Rambam's Moir Nevuchim and the Sefer HaMada to many of the fanatical Dominican monks. And they just lapped this up. They're just eating this up. They have an opportunity to get at that. And they gave them over to the monks that they should determine whether these works contained heretical or blasphemous material. And they should decide. So the monks eagerly, they joined the fray, and they took part with the anti-Maimonides camp. They quickly determined, of course, the Paskin, that these works were heretical, and therefore they, with the monks, that they gleefully conducted, which is known as auto de fe, to burn publicly, it was the Montpellier, in 1234, they consigned all the manuscripts of the Moir Nevuchim, and the Sefer Amada to be burned, went up in flames. Interesting thing is that the Rambam's works, again, were burned publicly by monks in Paris, something like less than 10 years later, it was in 1242, was again, Rambam's works were burnt again, this was in Paris, but less than 40 days later, after the second burning, less than 40 days later, it was followed by the tragic burning in Paris of 24 wagon loads of all available manuscripts of the Talmud. 24 wagon loads of manuscripts of the Talmud was burnt on the sixth day of Parshas Chukas. Vav Chukas was on a Friday. And therefore, maybe some people are aware that there are people to this day that fast, the Mogen Avraham brings it down in Halacha. There are people who are noyik to fast to this day every year, which is the Friday of Parshas Chukas. Interesting thing is, usually we commemorate a day by a calendar date, not by a day of the week. But here this is different, and being that it happened on a Friday, and it happened the week of Parshas Chukas, so the custom has it, by many, that every year, the week of Parshas Chukas, the Friday, on Friday, that people fast. Of course, they don't fast Mamshin to Shabbos, they stop before. And the remez was, as the Sfarim bring down, on Zoyis Chukas HaTorah, the Targum says, what is Zoyis Chukas HaTorah? Look at the Targum, Do Gzeiras Oiraisa, which also can serve to mean, this was the cutting, Gzeira means to cut, Legezer Yamsev Legzaram, to cut into pieces, where the Torah was splintered, the Torah was torn apart, and the Torah was destroyed. Do Gzeiras Oiraisa. The Parshas Chukas. And this is what happened, and as a result of this, there was a lot of insufferable pain, this machloikas caused, and so on and so forth. Rabbeinu Hillel of Verona, again another Rishon which again is not all too popular in the Olam HaTorah that much, but one of the great Rishonim, Rabbeinu Hillel of Verona of Italy, was an eyewitness to these tragic events regarding the Talmud burning. As an overt sign, he said that this is a divine wrath, this is clearly Hashgocha Protis Min HaShemayim, that 24 wagon loads of man, you have to realize this was before the time of the era of printing. It's not like today. Even today would be a terrible tragedy, you know, if you have wagon loads of Svarim being burnt, all the Gemaras being burnt. You know, so you print them again. As terrible as it is. But those things were manuscripts. And to write a manuscript takes tedious work, hard work, very expensive, a long time. And you just don't have it written up from one day to the next. So you had 24, all available manuscripts at the time, which amounted to 24 wagon loads of wagons, were a little bit burnt, and that's why we have, right, Shali Srufa Beish, which is the Maram Rottenberg, therefore he composed, which is the kina we say on Tisha B'Av, regarding the strafe of the burning of those 24 wagonals in Paris of the Talmud that was burned. Now Rabbeinu Hillel of Verona was one who was an eyewitness to this account regarding the burning of the Talmud, and he said clearly that he sees this as Gocha Protest, this is the Shemayim taking revenge, and this is retribution for the events which led to the burning of the Rambam Svarim. Therefore he writes the following words, using perceptive observation. I'll write you, just give you just a couple of his lines. Rabbeinu Hillel of Verona, regarding the burning of the 24 wagon loads and how he viewed it, why this happened, what was the cause of this. And he writes as follows. He writes, Hashem Mishomayim Hishkif, the Almighty looked down from heaven, V'yikane l'chvoid Rabbeinu HaKodesh l'chvoid Svarov. Ben Hillel writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked down from heaven and he avenged the honor, he says, of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, of our holy teacher, which is the Rambam, and of his Sfarim. And he writes further, he says, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent forth his wrath and his anger upon the Jewish communities of France, nor did he act favorable towards his own Torah, because we see that the Gemaras themselves subsequently were burnt, writes Rabbeinu Hillel, he says. And continues Rabbeinu Hillel, and he says as follows, don't you ask in amazement, he says, how is it that the Almighty did not regard favorably the 1,200 manuscripts of the Talmud and Agoda, which were consumed by the fire, because of the Sefer, he says, Hamoira and the Sefer Hamada? You know, just because of the Rambam, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow that his own Torah, which means all the Gemaras are going to be burned. Don't ask that question, he says, because you shall keep in mind that Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon was almost second in his generation to Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you can burn Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon's Svarim, then Torah's Moshe can also be burnt. They're not too far apart. Says Rabbeinu Hillel Varonah. So don't ask in amazement how HaKadosh Baruch allowed this to happen, because the godless of Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam, he says, equals, just about, he says, the godless of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says further, be not amazed, he says, therefore, if the Almighty punished the Jews of France, because the honor of Rabbeinu Moshe, which is the Rambam, if it did not show favor to the books of the Talmud, as he looked down upon them in a pillar of fire and cloud. And he says further, don't you ask, who can know? Now, so what's the riot? How do you know that this one thing has to do with the other? How do you know that the fact that the 24 wagon loads of the Talmud were burned, that this has something to do with burning the Rambam? So he says further, don't you ask, how can you know whether the terrible edict, he says, concerning the burning of the Talmud came about as a result of the burning of the Sefer Hamad and the Sefer Hamoire? So he says, I'll answer you. And Yoshivloch. He says, this is a sign, this is the sign and the proof. Behold, because not even 40 days passed between the burning of the works of our master and the burning of the Talmud, number one. And also, it took place in the very same place. The same place where they burned the Rambam. Less than 40 days. And in addition, it was also in the exact same place, he says. And that very same place where all the Sfarim found in Paris consumed, and the ashes of the manuscripts of the Talmud mingled with the ashes of the books of the Rambam. He still had the ashes of the old Sfarim that were burned from the Rambam. And they all were mingled together, he says, in the very same place where the Talmud was consumed. This was a clear proof to all, to both Jews and Gentiles. So again, this is just a little bit of some of the history, a little bit concerning, again, Rabbeinu Yoinah regarding the Rambam. And the Bez Hashem, next week we'll continue a little bit further on regarding this issue, subsequent to that. We continue now, Rabbi Yisrael Nishari Tshuva. We had started Sif Yud Aleph, which is Ha'ikar HaSheni, Sharish and Sif Yud Aleph, Ha'ikar HaSheni. And we did a few lines and we're up to the words Vida. We basically pointed out, and we're going to go through it here, basically line by line, Rabbi Yoni here sets up the following. That although he mentioned in the previous Sifim, Rabbi Yoni, regarding the Seder of Tshuva, Tshuva has a particular Seder. Tshuva is a discipline of how one does Tshuva appropriately. And as a matter of fact, in the different Rishonim, there are differences of opinion. Rabbi Yoni's opinion, as he pointed out, that first comes the Seder. First comes the Seder of Charote, where one should feel sincere regret concerning the Avera. And he speaks about all of the different feelings that a person of regret, all the different aspects of regret, the actual Avera and also the being distanced from Hashem and so on and so forth, and also the retribution that one causes and brings upon oneself. All the different aspects of regret, because the Avera caused so many different negativity, and therefore they're all the different hargoshes, feelings that a person should have. First comes Charote, and then really comes Azivas HaChet. This will lead a person to really to forsake and to abandon the Chet, and really chart himself a new course. But Rabbi Yoinah now continues on to say that the truth is there are two separate Siddurim, there are two separate Mahalchim for two different people. There is one Seder for someone who is a Chayte B'derech Mikra, there's one Seder for someone who's only an occasional Baal Chayte, and there's a different Seder for someone who used to be a continuous, a perpetual sinner. He says, the Chayte was Chayte B'derech Mikra, an occasional Baal Chayte. For him, we say the Seder is first to have Charota, and then Azivas HaChet. But someone who was a Chayte Tomei, someone who basically was a continuous sinner, for him you cannot say first have Charote, because in order to have the proper Hagosh of Charote, he must first drop the Chayte, because Charote will mean nothing if he continues to do it. What kind of Charote is it, Bechlau? And he goes on to describe it even more in detail, that for a person who is a continuous sinner, before having regret, first stop what you're doing. Of course, you have to have some degree of regret. Why would you otherwise want to stop it altogether? We're talking about regret in its deepest form, in its most penetrating form, that you cannot have if you're a continuous sinner unless you first drop the chet, drop the avere, drop at least for now what you're doing, and that will build up the true feelings of charote. But if you can't ask a person to have charote first, if he did not really start with azivas achet, if he's still connected to the chet, what kind of charote is he really feeling? No serious charote, for certainly not. So here he goes on to say as follows. Vada, I want you to know. Kimi asher chote al derech mikra. He says, if someone sinned b'derech mikra, means occasional. Someone who sins occasional, And the reason why he sinned occasionally, ki his avo tavo, because he was, right? He was confronted. He was surrounded with a desire, with a taiva. The yechzakol of Yitzroi v'yit kofeyu. And he was overwhelmed, he was overpowered by his Yitzhar. First of all, you see right away, the occasional sinner only sins for one reason, basically. You see, you have to take every word very, very specifically. When a Rishonim writes something, it's very, very meduyik. In other being that he's an occasional sinner, that means his head is in the right place. The reason he sinned is not because he wanted to sin philosophically, it's because he was not able to overpower his desire and basically his instincts. Took the best of him. It got the best of him. And what happened? When a person becomes attacked, it's an attack. A desire attack. A temptation attack. It's an attack like any other attack. No different than a heart attack or any other attack. You're being attacked. All of a sudden, you find yourself with a tremendous desire. You find yourself in a situation of tremendous temptation. What he should have done is really, as you say, nip it in the bud. But he didn't. He allowed it to linger, and once it lingers, it festers itself, and it grows on him, and takes control over him. But Yoni points out, look what happened, that's why he's only the occasional sinner, because basically his head is in the right place. But he was enraptured, and he was therefore engulfed. He was surrounded with taivet. His thoughts and his senses did not brave the attack. See, that's the problem. There's no indictment if a person has temptation all the time. You have desires. We are created. We are human beings. And then we are going to be confronted with all types of desire. But the question is, what do we do with it? How do we deal with it? How do we react to it? So Rabbi Yoni says that the occasional sinner, the problem why he did sin occasionally, because when he was confronted and the Yitzhar overpowered him, it was because his rayoinus, means his thoughts and his senses, did not brave the attack. The idea is nechelzu. You see the loshen nechelzu. That's from the loshen that we find in the Chumash by the Benigod Bnei Ruvim, right? When the Yidden were ready to come to Eretz Yisrael, and they requested from Moshe Rabbeinu, they want to remain, right? Be'evar Yarden, on the other side of the Yarden, and Moshe Rabbeinu discussed that they have to agree, though, right? The loshen was, the pasuk says necholetz chushim. Necholetz chushim means to arm yourself swiftly. Necholetz means to arm yourself swiftly. When a person finds himself with a desire attack, you have to arm yourself. You try to protect yourself. You can't allow it. If you're just going to sit back, then it's going to take control over you. And he didn't do it quick enough. Later on, he wants to. But now he finds himself that he's unable to do it. Because, v'lo nechelzu, again, rayoina v'chusha b'figoy boy. He did not allow, he did not work with zrizis. In other words, one of the secrets to overpower Yetzirah is quickly, swiftly. Don't allow it to set in. That's one of the major yesodis. The major yesodis is, as you say, and by the way, in physical situations, the same way, physical types of sicknesses also, they say prevention, right, is a pound of cure. Once the machle, the sickness overtakes you, it's much more difficult to get rid of it. And as the Bala Musa always point out, you know, these stories with a Roman soldier, could have been anybody, it doesn't have to be Dafke Roman soldier, stories that a person was accosted. And by a Roman soldier, an officer, who wanted to arrest him. So the person was very quick in his senses, and what he decided to do is, knowing the nature and the weaknesses of the Roman soldiers, so he takes out a $5 bill, again, using our denomination, takes a $5 bill, and he bribes him. Sure enough, for $5, they just dropped the whole thing, and just let him go by. But the other story is, where the same person, had he not taken out the $5 bill to bribe him, and he's arrested, and now he comes in front of a judge, $5 ain't going to do it. Now already he's in trouble. Now he has to, really, if at all, if bribe will work, it'll cost him much, much more, because they're in front of the judge now. So the same thing is with the Yetzirah, the same thing. Before the Yetzirah has his grasp and his hold on you, with a $5 bill, so to speak, you can take care of it. But once you allow him to take control over you, so now you're on the other end. So he's overpowering you, and you're in the vulnerable spot, and it's going to take much more koyach and much more force against him. That's the key, that's the secret, that a person should act swiftly. That is one of the soides and secrets of overpowering the Yetzer. Continues Rabbeinu Yoni further, says the Shaar Tshuva. V'loy maharu, you did not act swift enough. See what he says again. V'loy maharu, you did not act swift enough, he says. Ligor b'yam hatava, did not shout down the sea of lust, the yechrav, in drying it up. It's an amazing thing. We see, by the way, Rabbeinu Yoina, the Shaar HaTshuva, clearly depicts the power of temptation. Upon temptation, imagine, you have to imagine you have an ocean in front of you. Everybody knows to cross an ocean, to conquer an ocean, is a difficult situation, to conquer the sea. And imagine if I would ask you, the way I want you to conquer the sea is, I want you to dry it up. So how many dish towels is it going to take to dry up the sea? Ben Yoin says, this is the task that you are confronted with the Yetzer Hara. You did not act swiftly enough. Ligur b'yam, Yetzer Hara is the yam. In order to shout down the yam, the sea of lust, yam ataiva, the yechrav, and to dry it up. So in a certain sense, you yourself fed and you fueled the Yetzer Hara by not acting swiftly enough. Because lingering, the longer that you allow the Yetzer Hara to be with you, that is the fuel. You are feeding him. That is the fuel of feeding your Yetzer Hara. And that explains, which we say, and you may have thought about it in the davening when it comes to Yom Kippur, and we say the vidui, among the different al-chets that we say al-chet shechaton ul-fanecho b'yetzer hara. That's one of the al-chets. We confess, and we ask forgiveness, we say al-chet shechaton ul-fanecho that we sinned b'yetzer hara with our Yetzer Hara. Now let me ask you a question. Aren't all the averus with the Yetzer Hara? Certainly not the Yetzer Tov. So every chet that you might have done is because the Yetzer Hara is involved. He's persuading you, he's enticing you. We're talking about people who the head is in the right place. Right? So what do you mean, al-chet? Is particular al-chet shechaton l'fanecho b'yetzer, as if there are two categories of chatoim? Are there any chatoim which the Yetzer Hara is not involved? He's a prime factor in all of your averus. So why do we say specific al-chet? Al-chet, and we are confessing, and we want to do tshuva, al-chet shechaton l'fanecho b'yetzer hara. The answer is as follows. Every avera involves the Yetzer Hara. But in certain cases, you, so to speak, provoke the Yetzer Hara. You fuel the Yetzer Hara. You allow the Yetzer Hara to remain without wearing him off, without fighting him off in time. As a result, it's because of you are the cause of your Yetzer Hara. That's a separate al-chet. Sometimes the Yetzer Hara comes on his own, and sometimes you're caught off guard, and you do an aveira. But many times you are the cause that brings upon yourself a Yetzer Hara. Give you another practical example to that. A person finds himself eating salty foods, he becomes thirsty. A person who is thirsty is going to have to drink water. And assuming that he doesn't really have water to drink, but he may have some beverage which is not that healthy, but he's so thirsty, so he has no choice, he's thirsty. So he has to drink that beverage, even though it's unhealthy. So you cannot really indict him all that much. The man is thirsty. What is he supposed to do? He needs water. Is he going to drink something that's unhealthy? However, if you go and eat salted peanuts to make yourself thirsty, and now you have to drink the bread, you're being indicted. You're not being indicted for drinking the water. You're being indicted for eating the salted peanuts that brought you in a situation that you have to drink that unhealthy water. Who told you to eat the salty peanuts? If you find yourself being thirsty and you're drinking water, even water that's unhealthy, so what can you do? You're thirsty. But sometimes you bring it upon yourself. We're talking about those Yetzer Haras that we brought upon ourselves. We did certain things. Maybe you should have read certain material. You would not have had that Yetzer Hara. So you brought that Yetzer upon yourself. Maybe you shouldn't be looking at certain things. Maybe you shouldn't go to certain places. Maybe you shouldn't keep certain company. You did. Yetzer Hara is there. But these are the Yetzer Haras that you created with your own hands. You created those monsters. That's the Al-Chet in that situation. Al-Chet Shechtonu L'Fanecho V'Yetzer Hara. So continues now the Shaar HaTshuva. So we're talking about a person who sins occasionally. Occasionally is simply because he was attacked by the Yetzer Hara of Taiva, and he just didn't react swiftly enough. Al-Kain, therefore, Yigoyreyu HaYetzer B'Charomov, therefore the Yetzer Hara was successful in confusing him with his tricks and his cunningness. V'Nofal B'Machmoyrov, and therefore he fell into his trap. But that's only L'Fishatoy V'Toy, but it's only for now, temporarily. It's only temporarily. V'Hiyoyis Ruach HaYetzer Rom Mevasoy, only as long as the Yetzer Hara still is upon him and intimidates him. But this is not really what he wants to be. That's why we're saying he's only an occasional sinner. Occasional because the Yetzer Hara got him at his weak point and he did not react properly. He did not react soon enough. V'loima asher cheftza ritzoinoi. The reason he sinned is not because he really wanted to. Limtzoi avoinoi v'lasas kumoi achrezois. Because he really wants to embrace and indulge afterwards. No. He deeply regrets the fact that he slipped. And we'd hope that next time he'll never do it again. So the reason he sinned now was because it was a point of weakness. And he did not react properly, did not react quickly enough. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. He allowed the Yetzer Hara to fester and to grow. Such a person now, if we have such a person, who is only an occasional sinner, because the Yetzer Hara happened to grab hold of him, Reishis Tshuva Suish Hazeh, so what's the Seder of this person? See? Now Rabbeinu is telling you, for an occasional sinner, you know what the Seder is? What's the Seder HaTshuva? First comes Charote. Because what's the second thing? The second thing is Aziva Sachet. What are you going to tell an occasional sinner, Aziva Sachet? He already is a person who is not connected to Chet. He's not really a sinner. The only reason he sinned occasionally was due to the fact that he felt that he was overpowered by his Yetzer Hara. So what do you have to ask him? To make a commitment not to sin. He already had the commitment even before he sinned. And yet he sinned. Because the person's weak. And he just didn't do what he was supposed to do once he felt and he was attacked. So to ask him simply for Azivas Achay, that he had all the time. But therefore, first what we want from him is Charot. First to really recognize what happened as a result of his weakness, says Rabbeinu Yoyne. He has to work on Charot, on regret. And that is Velosim Yogo in Beliboy. He should have sorrow in his heart. He should engender sorrow in his heart, Al Chatosoy, for his sinning. Velios nefesh nano umora chilano, and he should feel his soul is afflicted, and the bitterness of a gall. So now, once he has charote, he really feels so badly about what he has done. Now he says, "Comes azivas achet." But what's azivas achet for him? It's a different definition. We tell him to stop sinning. He is a person who's not a sinner, basically. Just because you sin here and there, you're not called a sinner. You don't identify him as a sinner. So what's azivas achet? Azivas achet is to work. To work on a higher level to be Moisef Yerushamayim. More Yerushamayim to learn more Sifrei Musar. That's his Aziv HaSachet. Aziv HaSachet is to feed himself with more Inyonim and Avodas Hashem. Yosef, he says, Achriken Yosef B'chol Yoyim Yiras Hashem B'Nafshoy. What he's supposed to do is to be Moisef, to continue to add Yerushamayim, V'yitein Chites Elokim B'lvove B'chol Eis. And he should inject within himself fear of heaven every time. Until he can feel pretty much secure. To the point that because now, after his charote, and after his hoysof in Yerushamayim, working on himself, learning Musar, and growing in Yerushamayim, that serves as a choyma, that serves as a wall, that serves as a protective wall around him. So now, next time when he's accosted by the Yetzer Hara, he's no longer the original person that he was. Now he knows how to deal with the Yetzer Hara. He says, "Kim Yosef Yavraboy Hayetzer." So now the Yetzer Hara again. If the Yetzer Hara confronts him again, as in the past, the Rabbe Olav Tavosoy, and his lust mounts, and he finds himself again in a situation where he desires Taiva Kamish Patarishin, but now he's not going to be as weak anymore. Because I already experienced it before, and he saw where it led to. Now he's going to take this new ammunition, this all the wherewithal that he has. He's going to learn from the past experience. Lo yeh nifte liboy olav. He will not allow himself to be seduced by the Yetzer Hara. Ve'yazov darkoi, and he will abandon the way of the Yetzer Hara. K'mo shenema, as the pasuk says, umoide. First, it says umoide. Umoide means to confront, recognize your avera. Then ve'oizev. Then is Azivas Achet, Yeruchim, you will find mercy, Menashemayim. In other words, his ketchila umoide, moide means al charote vavidui, that's the first thing, regret and vidui and confessing, v'achar v'yoizev and then v'oizev. And v'oizev again, how Rabbi Yon explained, we're talking about a person who basically is not a sinner. V'yoizev means, what do you mean you tell him to abandon the chet? He's a person who always really, in philosophy, abandons. It means to do things to allow him to grow in Yerushamayim, to give him the koyach, not to be connected to chet when he's confronted with it. So again, to a person, this is step number one. He, till now, Rabbi Yoni was talking about the person who basically is a choyte only b'derech mikre. A person was a choyte occasionally. It's a person choyte only occasionally because the Yetzer Hara took hold of him. By the way, Rabbi Pian used to say many times, it says, "Akavya b'mahalal eloimer," as the Mishnah says in Ovi, "Yistakil b'shloisha devorim v'yi'atu bo l'dei avera." Kavya says, observe three things. Dama ayim bosa, remember where you came from. You came from a tipa serucha. Right? Ulana to hoylech. And where are you going to? We know where you're going to. Lamokam Ofer, Rima Vesaleya, the caver. And Lifnemiya to Osef Litin Din Vecheshim, in front of whom you have to give an accounting. These are three things. What is the Kavi Menal saying? How is he using? How is he wording his statement? Yistakel B'shoishu Devorim. Keep bare these three things in mind. And what? And you will not come into the hands of the Avera. What does it mean? You will not come to the hands of the Avera. Why the emphasis on the hands? Rabbi Alpian used to say as follows. What Akabi Mahal is telling you, observe these three things and you will not come into the clutches of the Avera. In other words, once the Avera has you, once you're already in the clutch of the Avera, you need more than these three things to get out of it. If you're stuck in the mud, you really need all the extra energy and you have to tap into many other resources to get out of the mud. But the idea is to do the proper thing to prevent oneself from really getting into Viatubali Dei Avera. These three things basically are aids not to come into the clutches of the Avera before. But once the Avera has you in his hands, once he has you, then these three things alone is not necessarily going to do it. It's going to cause you much more effort. So again, a person who's only a chayti b'derech mikra, someone who's only the occasional sinner, Ben Yoni says for him to say there's first charata, and then is azivas achet on a higher degree. Azivas achet is on a higher degree by being moisif, as he said, Yerushimayim, and therefore generating within himself greater mile of Yerushimayim, greater fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and be mindful of that, right, b'choleis, as much as possible. That is, again, the person who is an occasional sinner. Chayti b'derech mikra, first comes charata, then comes azivas achet. Ach, continues now the Shara Tshuva. However, ha'ish ha'misyatzev al derech loy toive tomit. However, what about the person who's always in a derech loy toive? That's where the Shara Tshuva phrases it. A person who's up to no good. He's misyatzev, that's his matzev. B'derech loy toive tomid. He's always going on a derech loy toive. So he's not just an occasional sinner, but basically he's a perpetual sinner. He's a perpetual bal chayte. What is his seder of tshuva? His seder of tshuva is the opposite, as we'll see. For him it's first, aziv zachet, first stop what you're doing. You can't continue behaving the way you are. And then charote, in order to be able to cement it in, and to purify the past, and to chart yourself a new course in life. Let's take a look how he expresses it. Says Rabbeinu Yoni Shara Tshuva as follows. He says, Acho isha misyatzev, however, the person misyatzev al derech loytoiva tomit, a person who always finds himself standing in a matzev of loytoiva, v'gever al chatov, v'gever means and the person, v'gever and this particular person, al chatov derech b'chol yoyim, he treads in this way every day. It's not an occasional situation. Every day he's repeatedly doing similar aveiras, the same aveiras, v'shoyne b'yivaltoi. And he repeats his avlas. He repeats his avlas, he repeats all that. Not only he repeats it, but sometimes he's even looking forward to it. A person who is a perpetual sinner, not just sometimes by force, but he's a perpetual sinner, means so male, this is his style of life. He did something the day before, and he can't wait for the next day to do it again. He's never satisfied. And just has the desires basically regenerate themselves over and over again. And therefore he says the lotion, V'shov b'merutzosoi gam pomim rabois. And basically he pursues it with ritza, with running after it. V'shov he returns b'merutzosoi gam pomim rabois. V'chol eis oyhev hora. And basically all the time he loves doing the bad that he's doing. He's satisfying his urges. He's satisfying his physical needs. So he keeps doing it and keeps doing it all the time. He's a person who, this is his general, natural way of life. And he sets before himself the block, stumbling block of sin. In other words, he himself is the cause. He sets before himself the stumbling block of sin. The michshel of avoyim, he sets it in front of him. Instead of going the other way, he goes towards it. That's his style of life. That's his lifestyle. See the words again. He himself places the stumbling block of sin in front of him. Instead of avoiding it, he goes davka towards it. He says, that's what I'm talking about, says the Shara Tshuva. The taiva and the yetzer, he's pursuing it. It's one thing when the yetzer pursues you. But here we have a person who is so lifestyle, he's so engulfed, he's so involved in a particular lifestyle, he's so connected to that lifestyle, that he's already pursuing it. The cheftzoi umagmosoi, and his desire, therefore, and his inclination, his hope, this type of person, what he always hopes for is to be successful in his pursuit of his tithe. That's another kind of a person. There are people who find themselves sitting by force, and deep down they say, and they pray, they say, Hashem, give me the koyach, give me the energy that I should be able to hold back. In other words, a person finds a situation. So he's hoping. that maybe he'll be able, the last minute, he'll be able to climb out of it. He'll be able to leave it. He'll be able to abandon it. Then you have a person just the opposite. He's pursuing ra, he's pursuing bad, he's pursuing evil, and he's hoping that he should always be successful. He says, please Hashem, don't take it away from me. Allow me to do the Aveira. Allow me to do the Aveira. Actually, Yibotzer Memenu Kol Asher Yozem Lasos. He does not want to be diminished, that which he's planning to do. This person now, Reishis Tshuvas Huish Hazeh. Now, what is the Seder at the beginning of the Tshuva for this person, as opposed to the other person? Because before we were talking about a person who was only Chayte B'derech Mikre. Now we're talking about the person who is a Chayte, right? Who is a Chayte Tomid. He's a Chayte Tomid in a continuous basis, on a continuous basis. So Reishis Tshuvas Huish Hazeh Lazoiv Darkoi. He says to abandon his way, Machshav Teirov. You're not up to Charote yet. By the way, you have to have minimal Charote. Otherwise, why would he Bechlal even want to listen to this? So, of course, we're talking about minimal Charote. But that's not the objective, to have minimal Charote. The main objective is that pure, pure Charote, which really penetrates deep in his heart. He's not ready for that. He's not ready for the deep Charote. But if he wants to do tshuva, the first step for him is, first of all, you have to stop. Lazar Darko, by the way, and sometimes it takes little by little. You can't expect a person to become a Baal Tshuva in 1 minute for everything. But start a little bit, every little step. Stop doing. If a person who is planning a Derech of Tshuva, you have to plan it like you plan business. Yeah? And if a person has a book and he plans strategy, right? What am I going to do? 9 o'clock, I'm going to call him. 10 o'clock, I have to call the other person. This is my next appointment. Is that? Am I making sure my car has enough gas because I have to travel 40 miles and so on and so forth? I have to have my directions. How do I go? You're planning. You have to plan your career of tshuva also. So you do it. You find out what's easier for you to do and so on and so forth. And you do it little by little. And that's how you climb up the ladder. But the point is you have to start somewhere. Stop doing. Lazev darkoi machshav tohoro. Ulahaskim and to agree. You have to be ready in your mind. You have to have resolve. Ulahaskim and to agree lekaye, to fulfill. Ulekabil olov lebal yosef lachti. That he's not going to continue to sin. Once he resolved, aziv zachet. Once he resolved, as if I'm going to stop, now we can work on the really regretting, the depth of regretting. We're talking about deep regret. Achrei kein, he says, after that, yischaret al aliloisov hanishchosois. Then he can have charote. Then he can attempt to have charote on his corrupt acts. After aziv is achet. So charote has to come for this person. Charote has to come for this person after aziv is achet. V'yoshev el Hashem. And then we really have him turning back to Hashem. With these two elements. The Aziv is a chayt, forsaking the chayt, abandoning the chayt, and then working on his charote. As the Posik says, the Posik in Yeshaya gives us this Seder, because we had another Posik talking the other way. The other Posik was Umoyde V'yoyz of Yeruchim. That Posik spoke about first Vidui, confessing in charote first, and then it spoke about Oizev, Aziv is a chayt. Now we have another Posik in the opposite. What determines which is which? What kind of a chayt he is. If he's a chayt b'derech mikre, right, only an occasional chayte, then comes first charote, afterwards aziv esachet. But here we have a posik saying, Yazoiv Rosh Darkoi, famous posik, we say it in the davening, Yom Neroim, especially. A person should abandon his ways, says Yeshaya Novi. The ish ovin machshavoysov. And the person who does evil things should abandon his thoughts. The Yoshev El Hashem, and return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Yirachameihu, and he'll have mercy. V'moshel bazeh. And I want to explain it to you, why it's so important. That you cannot really have real charote without first, of course, abandoning. First, aziv esachet, you have to have first. The kama moshel is, imagine he says, l'misha oiches hasheretz ubo litful ulitire. Toilu sheretz biyodo. Everybody knows that example. Somebody who touches a sheretz, an unclean, right, reptile, of course, a dead sheretz, you become tomei. The Torah says a specific shorotzim, not all shorotzim, only shemani shorotzim. If you touch these particular shorotzim, these particular reptiles, you touch them, you become tomei. So now what do you have to do? You have to go to the mikveh to become pure. So if a person still holds on to the dead sheretz, right, and goes into the mikveh, you have two contradictions, two opposing forces. The sheretz is metami, and the mikveh is trying to purify you, it's not going to work. It's toivul v'sheretz biyodoy. Rav Yoina tells us here in Shari Tshuva, how do we categorize aziv esachet versus charote? He says, charote is the mikveh. What purifies you from your sin, from your past? The deep regret, you have to realize, regret is a fiery, that's something that penetrates into the heart. It really goes through and through you. It consumes you. That's what regret is about. So it's like undergoing a process in a fiery furnace. When you go, you put something, you put silver, you put metal, you put elements, you put it into a furnace, it purifies, it takes out the psoilus, takes out the impurity. The charote is the mikveh that purifies the neshama. But if you do not have aziv esachet, if you didn't abandon the avera, it's like going to a mikveh, it's like you're toiling with the sheretz still in your hand. So your charote, bechlal, doesn't mean anything. As says Rabbeinu Yoina, Shaar Tshuva L'Misha Oiches, imagine the mashal to someone who is Oiches HaSheretz. He's basically holding on to the Sheretz. He's holding on to the unclean Sheretz. Ubal Litfoil Ulihitoir. And he's coming to Toivlin to purify himself. Ki Yaniach HaSheretz Tchilu. So first we tell him, put down the Sheretz. Drop the Sheretz. Leave the Sheretz. Va'achriken Yitfoil V'yitor. And then your Toivlin become Tohar. The Chol Zman Sheretz Be'yodoy. But Chol Zman, the Sheretz is still in his hand. Oy to Mose Boy. The ain hat tefillah ma'ilo. The tum is still upon him, and tefillah will not help. Says Rabbeinu Yoina, corresponding to sheretz and tefillah are the two elements azivas achet and charote, as he goes on to say. Vine azivas machsheves hachet. He says, forsaking an evil thought, azivas achet, forsaking the evil thought, abandoning the evil thought of chet. That is he hashlochas hasheretz. That's casting away the sheretz. Abandoning the machshav of chet. From now on, I resolve, I don't want to sin anymore. I don't want to sin anymore. That's throwing away the sheretz. That's casting away the sheretz. V'charote, and the feeling, the pangs, and the pain of charote. Masher choto, the charote, the regret for having sinned, the havidui, and the confessing, and the tefillah, that's b'mokem ha-tefillah. That's in the place of tefillah, tovlin. So how can you have tefillah? How can you go to a mikveh? How can you tovel if the sheretz is still with you? So the charote was supposed to serve as a purification process. In other words, the charote really changes the whole history of the person. Because once a person underwent the entire tshuva process, he's no longer considered the old person. A bal tshuva is like a newly born person. A bal tshuva is like a newly born person. A person was tomei, goes to the mikveh, now he's pearly tor. By the way, how does a mikveh work? Without going too much into this idea. But as the Chinuch writes in Sefer HaChinuch, that a mikveh, basically, the way a mikveh functions, of course, with the secrets of Hashem, we're not here to delve into it, but to give us some understanding, to give us a little bit of a hargoshim, a feeling, as is known as the Chinuch does. But whenever we explain mitzvahs, this is not the end of a mitzvah, but this is just explaining it in a way that we can relate to it a little bit closer, and therefore it enhances our experience. We do the mitzvah because Hashem told us to do it. That's why our minds can never fathom the deep wisdom that is, and the secrets which go beyond even human comprehension. But as much and as little as our minds are capable to comprehend, so we find the Rishonim right trying to explain to us some way. So the Chinuch explains the idea of mayim is when a person goes into water. Person goes into water, you realize, and this is an amazing thing, a person who goes into a mikveh, so you dunk yourself into the water, you realize under the water you can't breathe. In other words, leaving the atmosphere, the world of life, going into a mikveh, in a certain sense, putting your head and you're immersing your entire body in water, you're in a different world. You're in a world of lifelessness. A human being cannot live in mayim. When you come out of the mikveh, you came back to life. So in fact, you are a newly born person. That's the idea. That's the idea of a mikveh. You can't live in water. So if you go and you submerge yourself, and a person immerses himself in mayim, he left the world of life. You are now underwater. You have left the world of life. When you come out, now you're in the world of life. You're as good as gone, and you came back. It's not just in and out of water. It's coming back from no life, back to life. It's kekot nahanoi ledome. And the Chinuch actually, he says even more. He says, in the beginning of creation, when nothing existed, Bereshis bar lakim, but right away in the beginning, what does it say? Beruach alakim rachefes apnei hamayim. So mayim brings you back to the beginning of creation. Mayim is the first item that is mentioned. Beruach alakim, the spirit of Hashem, rachefes, was sort of like floating, hovering over the mayim. Mayim is mentioned right at the beginning of creation. In other words, when you go into mayim, and you go into a mikveh, it brings you back to the beginning of creation. So says the Chinuch. In a certain sense, the beginning of your creation. That's the idea of mayim. So you become a newly person. So, charote is b'mokim tefillah. Charote is like a mikveh. Charote, says the Shaar Tshuva, is like a mikveh. Which means is, it burns through all of your feelings, the feelings of regret. It burns through and erases your whole past history. It erases your whole past history. Just like a mikveh erases your past history. Like newly born. When you come out of that mikveh. The same way the charote erases your past history, you're like newly born. You're a different person now. It's not the person with the old feelings. This is the person with the new feelings. Totally different attitude. Totally different outlook in life. But in order for that mikveh to work, you have to drop the sheretz, of course. Otherwise, it cannot work. So it continues on the Shaar Tshuva, and he says, Bahoya, and it will come to pass, he says, Bahoya ki yavoyu yisurim ma'machoyim ala rosha. And he says, when the evil person will find himself visited upon him pain and suffering, Ashutomit al Zemomov, Ashutomit kol Zemomov is halach b'shomov, when he finds that all his thoughts, because this Russia, all his thoughts are to be able to be successful in doing wrong. Then he finds himself being afflicted with pain and suffering. Yevase batchila, he becomes chastised. The Yoshiv machshavto hero. So the first thing what he has to do is abandon his thoughts of doing bad. Asher choshav v'yachris ma'abodov miyodov. He should sever his evil deeds from his hands. That is the way it works. A person who is a perpetual sinner, the first thing is, aziv zachet, try to stop as much as you can what you're doing. If you can't do all of it, do a little bit. Do something. Do something. That is the first thing in your road to tshuva. You have to have aziv zachet in some degree. I'll give you an example. He says, le'egel, imagine a calf, asher yakuhu b'malmad habokor lechavin klomov. When you have a calf or you have an ox, in those days when you used to go plowing, what happens is the farmer has a design, expects to have the furrows being plowed in the field straight. It happens many times that the animals, they sort of like veer off course. So what happens when the animal veers off course, the furrow is not going to be straight. Well, you know what the farmer does? So the farmer does is he has a goad or he has a sort of a whip. He cracks the whip on the animal to get him to go straight. In a certain sense, he says, Hashem does the same thing. He sends his messages to you to get you back on the road. Just like he said, just like to the owner of the calf who is doing his plowing, right? We'll strike the ox or the animal in order to get him back on the right road. He says, that's the moshel, he says, to the egel asher yakuhu, he'll be struck b'malmad. Malmad is a goad or a whip. He says, b'malmad habokor lechavin klomov, to straighten his furrow. Cain, so too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends you messages. You're not able, unfortunately, to read those messages. That's the problem. Cain ha-misyatzev al derech le-toyva. So to a person who finds himself on a no-good road, means a person who is continuously, we're talking again about the perpetual sinner, yikach ha-musa t'chila. First, take the message. What should you do? How do you react to the message? Aziv esachet. That's the first thing. He keeps saying it over and over again. La'zoiv darkim ovis. These are ways leading to death. Olechez derech yosher. And to go on the right road. K'ma shenemar. He quotes the Pasuk in Yirmiyah. Shemoya shemati Ephraim misnoided. The Novi says, I heard Ephraim is the name symbolic of all the Jewish people. I heard Ephraim is moaning. What is he moaning? Ephraim is moaning by saying, Yisar Toni, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have caused me pain. You have sent retribution. In other words, you have chastised me. The Ivose ke'egel eluma, the problem is, and I become chastised like the egel, like the calf that is untrained. V'oyed nemer achrov, and the Pasuk says, ki achre shuvi nichamti. After my returning, then I regret it. What does it mean? That first you have to take the message to abandon, aziv esachet, and then comes nichamti, then comes the regret. Right, Shalomer, ki achrei asher yisartoni, after you chastise me, that's the message you're sending me in Hashemayim, you're chastising me, v'ivoser, so v'shavti medarki horo, so now I turned away from my bad ways, that's aziv esachet, I stopped doing the bad things, but now I can come to regret, to real regret. Nichamti achrechein ve'eschoret, and I regret al mashe ovar medivrei avenoisai from my averis. So very because we stop here, we find over here that, as Rabbi Yoen tells us, the two different drachim, the two different aspects of the Seder of Tshuva. So people who basically have their weaknesses always in the same area, so for them, that Avera upon him is something that they keep doing it. You could have a person, you see, that Bederach Klal, he's not a perpetual sinner. But in one area, he has a weakness, and he continuously falls in that area. That person is a perpetual sinner, at least in that area. So for him, when he wants to do tshuva in that area, the first thing is Aziv Esachet for him. Because even though Bederach Klal, he puts on tefillin every day, he davens every day, and keeps Shabbos, keeps kosher. But in one area, he always sins in that area because that's his weakness. Could be in the area of money. He doesn't do his business, run the business honestly. Or whatever the situation might be. In other areas of desires and temptations. So in that area, he's a perpetual sinner. And in order to do tshuva, what he has to do is, aziv esachet, first stop. And then work on the charote. The charote will come later. Let me point out like this. When we talk about the neshama, the soul of a person, Rav Tzadik HaKohen tells us that in the same way that we have physical eyes, we have eyes, of course, And Baruch Hashem, we should be very, very privileged and thankful that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us our eyes, we're able to see. The truth is that the neshama is also an eye. The soul of a person is the spiritual eye of a person. Which means is, in the same way that the eye of a person is a window to the world, with the eyes he has the whole world open to him, he's able to see everything. The same way is the eyes of a person, of course, are a person's most precious possessions. And by the way, we know what the Gemara tells us, Masechtas Nedarim, Daf Samach Daled, that Suma is Choshev Kemes. That someone who is blind, unfortunately, the Gemara says, is akin to death. It's not much living, even though today, as I read, Baruch Hashem, a lot of inroads have been made, at least in some substitute ways, that a person who cannot see should be able to avail himself of so many ways, reading material through artificial ways, through Braille and so on and so forth. And inroads are being made as we speak, even. The Choshev Yaman, during the summertime, a young man from the Kollel Beis HaTalmud, actually, he's doing a little bit of business also. He's a very extreme Ilui, or you can call him. He has extreme talent in computers. We set up computer programming, which works for people who are sightless in amazing, amazing ways. And he showed me some demonstrations of it. It's just unbelievable. Learning Gemara, Chumash, Rashi, it's just amazing things what can be done. So, the same way, Rav Leib Chassman points out, he says, we know that the eyes, how big is the eye? I mean, what percentage of a human body? And that eye determines the whole, without the eye is nothing. The person closes his eyes, he's in a world of darkness. He might as well not be here. And yet, what percentage, right? What percentage of the human body? The eye is so small. The eye is so small. It takes up very, very little. And that eye is his window to the world. That eye is his window to the world. And yet, says Rav Leib Chassman, the Mishgich of Chevron, that's all. He points out that the tiniest speck of dust, he says, can cause a person to shut his eye tightly and close out everything. That's all you need. That eye, that is a window to the world, that allows you to see everything, to encompass the whole beauty of the world, everything. But all you need, as an infraction, is a tiniest speck of dust, he says, can cause a person to shut his eyes tightly and close out everything, the beauty, the glory, all the potential, all the knowledge, the reading material, everything that he's able to avail himself, and just moments ago, everything was open to him. What took it away? One tiny speck of dust took it away. Similarly, one little speck closes the world, a world of light, a world of glory, a world of beauty, turns into darkness, one little speck of dust. So Rav Leib Chassman, he says, a man's neshama, he says, yearns continuously for spiritual heights, and is eager for the spiritual growth and the potential that lies before him. Torah and mitzvahs and so on. But he says, but the smallest sin, the smallest avera, like the speck of dust, causes the neshama to cringe, to darken, and to close up within itself. As long as that speck is not really washed away, it impedes, he says, further vision. And as long as the sin, he said, is not removed by tshuva, it prevents spiritual growth. So here we have the idea. So the charata, as points out Rabbi Yoina, that is what washes it out. That's like the tevila. That's what washes out all the specks of dust, all the averis, all the situation that a person has to allow a person really to avail himself of all of his tremendous, tremendous potential in growth. Let me just tell you a very interesting episode. Many people, when the sun of success is shining upon them, they somehow feel that they have it secured and guaranteed. And sometimes they come to a situation where they simply think that they are invulnerable, that nothing can harm them. They are led to believe that nothing will ever occur to take it away, to disturb or to disrupt their regular routine of life. As a matter of fact, even David HaMelech says that there was a time that he made that mistake, thinking it's always going to be as good as it's going. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, and you know the Pasuk in Kapitel Lamed, V'ani omarti bishalvi bal emoit le'yoylom. He says, when I was in a state of tranquility, and that's when I had it good, shalva means tranquility. Ani amarti bishalvi, when I had the time of shalva, tranquility, what did I say? Balemot le'olam. I'll never slip. He says, I'll never falter. I thought so. But I was tragically mistaken, David HaMelech says. He's a person like David HaMelech. Sometimes it just goes this way. This is the way it is. You don't ever think that something might happen to take it away from you. I want to tell you something, a fascinating episode. And there was an Odom Godel, the name that was used is Reb Cheskel. That was not his real name, but the family didn't want that this particular situation I'm talking about to go by his name. Reb Cheskel basically was a person who was born in 1901, and he passed away in 1964 in Yerushalayim. And by the way, just to give a little introduction, this Reb Cheskel on a spiritual level was considered to be a tremendous tzaddik, a much heralded tzaddik. He was also an outstanding Talmud Chochem. One can call him a Godel B'Yisrael. He was. He was a Godel B'Yisrael in Sitkis and in the Talmud Chochem. And he was known out throughout all of Eretz Yisrael. As he said, he was Nifter in 1964. He was the Talmud of Rabbi Leib Chassman. Just so happened that we mentioned before, the Chevron Mashgiach. And he himself was a Malamed or a Yeshiva for more than 20 years in Yeshiva Chai Olam. Yishlaim Chai Olam was a very famous Yeshiva. Yeshiva Chai Olam. Many Gedol Yisrael, by the way, came out of that Yeshiva. And he was a Malamed and taught in Yeshiva Chai Olam for over 20 years, still in the old city of Yerushalayim. And he was the founder of the first Yeshiva in Haifa, this Reb Cheskel. Now, also interesting thing, physically, he also was a man of tremendous strength and stamina. It was said that when he was young in his youth, and the Jews were always attacked by Arabs in Eretz Yisrael, so they said that he once single-handedly held a door closed, he says, as 20 Arabs on the other side of the door were attempting to push the door in. And he was on the other side, single-handedly was able to keep the door closed, and the intent of saving the Jews on the other side. A man with tremendous physical stamina. In spite of everything, at the age of 48, Reb Cheskel was stricken with a terrible illness, which caused him to lose one of his legs. This is Reb Cheskel. So for the next 15 years of his life, he basically suffered great pain. He was confined to a wheelchair. That's the way he was. He was confined to a wheelchair for the rest of his life, the last 15 years of his life. He passed away, by the way, was this Chodesh Shvat? It was on the 25th of Chodesh Shvat, which he passed away. Before he passed away, by the way, 25th of Shvat is also the yahrzeit for Rasul Salanter. He happened to pass away on that day, but that's... So, he wrote, by the way, in his tzavo, in his will, that on his matzeh, that on his tombstone, simply write as follows. He said, basically, Poi Nitman, basically says, here lies a man who suffered greatly, who suffered Yisurim, and a man who did not attain everything he could have. He's a great tzaddik. He indicted himself that he did not realize his potential. That's the way of great tzaddikim. The greater they are, they always feel that there was so much more left to do. So on his matzev, he wanted this written. He lies a man who lived a life of great suffering, a lot of suffering, and did not attain everything he could have. He was a tremendous onif, it's obvious. So in his tremendous onivus, he also insisted that he not be buried, which he would have, in the Chelkas Rabbonim and Har Menuchis. If you go to Har Menuchis, there's a Chelik, a section which is for the Rabbonim, all the great Rabbonim. It's an awesome, if you've never been there, it's Kedait, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, just take a visit, if you say it appropriate, visiting a cemetery. But you just go there, you go to the Chelkas Rabbonim, and you find over there, you find the Belzer Rebbe, you find the Rebbe Moshe, you find the Matisdorfer Roof, you find the Briskerov, you find Cheskel Avramsky, you name it, they are there. All the Gedol Yisrael, and Mamish in close proximity, one next to the other. You never find, as you say, so many, all the great, unfortunately not, which is just right here in front of you. You have so many choices where you want to daven, at which kever you want to stop by. You're tempted to want to stop at every one. Mr. Zalman, who you want to think of the great people in Eretz Yisrael. He insisted that not to be buried in the Chelkas HaRabbonim, but rather he wants to be buried with the simple people, those that basically were Shomer Shabbos, people who put on tefillin every day, and so on. More than anything, he hated machloikis. He hated machloikis, arguments or fights, and in his tzavoy, he advised his children, and he said like this, he says, if you're davening in shul, he says, and you hear two people arguing, then even if you're in the middle of saying Shema, he says, walk away, so that you are not going to be near people who are in dispute and are in discord. This is what he wrote it for. Even in the middle of davening, they see machloikis, just walk away from it. Even in the middle of Shema, he says, just walk away. Reb Cheskel, Lamaise, basically, he had a lot of fascinating things that happened with him because he was such a humble person, he would not like to talk about it. However, one exception was, at a Sheva Brochus of his son, Reb Cheskel detailed, by the way, in poetry, in Gramen, he had a tremendous talent for Gramen. He was not a Batchim, could have been, but he was not a Batchim, he had a Koich, so at his son's Sheva Brochus, so in Gramen, in poetry, in prose, he basically related, I'm not going to say it in prose to you, I'll tell you what was this particular incredible story, which this Reb Cheskel says. Cheskel Rabbeisai lived in a complex in Yerushalayim, which is known as Brody's Houses. In Yerushalayim, they say, Brody's Heiser. I happened to go visit someone, that area is still around here. It's called Brody because of the name Brody, this complex, who donated the area. And this is called Brody's Houses. It's known. There's like the Ungarische Heiser. There's all different areas of Yerushalayim, which are known by particular names of how the Warschauer Heiser is the houses of Warsaw. This is Brody's Houses. He lived in Brody's Houses. And so one particular afternoon, Rabbi Cheskel, he wants to get some fresh air. So he wheeled himself. This way that he would wheel himself in his wheelchair into the courtyard. He was learning from a sefer. And suddenly he hears an argument between, he says, a young woman and an old man. So being that we know that he despised arguments, whatever it was, he would not stay around for arguments. So quickly he wheels himself back into his house. He didn't want to stay there. But he couldn't help overhear the bitter words that were exchanged by the two people as he was wheeling himself back. The woman was shouting, saying, "That apartment," he says, "should belong to me," she says. "I have a growing family. I have my whole life yet to live. My children and I are the ones who deserve the new available apartment." And the older gentleman countered and he said, "I've been on the waiting list for years. I've priority. The apartment should really be mine." In other words, larger apartments were something very hard to come by. People lived in very cramped quarters. And they put themselves on a waiting list, hoping when one would be available. Here, apparently, there was a dispute between the old man and the young woman. It was one apartment was made available. Who deserves that the landlord should give him the apartment? So the old woman says, "I deserve it." And the old man would say, "No, I deserve it. It should belong to me." This was the situation. So it got heated very, very quickly. Rabbi Cheskel was closing the door. He heard the following, just as he was closing the door, that the woman finally, she says to the old man, and she pushed it, she lost her wits, and she says to him, says, "Your life is almost over," she says. "I have so many years ahead of me, it's I who deserve the apartment," she says to the old man. And the old man says, "Only Hashem knows how many years anyone has left." That's the way it ended. With that, he closes the doors behind him, stung by the bitterness of the dispute that he overheard. Now, talking about Arabs all the time, what happened was, very interestingly enough, 2 days after this argument, there's a bomb in the courtyard of Brody's Houses that we're talking about, in that complex, in the courtyard. Reb Cheskel sitting in his house, and he hears there's a bomb whizzing overhead. He heard the sound over the building and lands in the courtyard. And he hears screams of pain. And pandemonium breaks loose. People were running out of the area. Reb Cheskel, though, is sure that among the screams, he hears the screams of his own son. He hears the screams of his own son after where the bomb fell. Quickly wheels himself out into the courtyard. And to his dismay, he sees his own son is lying on the ground. He was wounded by a shrapnel from a grenade, told by the Arab. The boy was bleeding profusely, and Rabbi Cheskel was trying even to get out of his own wheelchair to be able to lift his son. As he bent over his injured son, there was an ambulance was going by. People flagged him down and took the son into the ambulance. Wounded child was taken to the hospital. His life was saved. Wounded son was saved. By the way, Rabbi Cheskel wanted to go into the ambulance to accompany his son to the hospital. He couldn't. Because why? Because there was another patient in the ambulance. He looked around, and he saw that the terrorist attack, the old man and the young woman, he says, the young woman was tragically, he says, now killed, and the old man who was wounded survived. The old man was in the ambulance with his son, and the young woman was tragically killed. He never talked about that, Reb Cheskel. This son, who was saved in the ambulance, got married, and after Sheva Brochus, Reb Cheskel was publicly thanking Hashem for saving his son's life, giving the opportunity, marrying him off at a Sheva Brochus. By the way, he thanked Hashem many, many times before, but now he did it publicly in this sense. At the son's simcha, sending an ambulance right in the nick of time. You know, sometimes all you need is just a few minutes delay and that's it. Thanking Hashem also for everything, the Hashgacha Pratis, everything. But even on this special night of joy, Reb Cheskel could not refrain from expressing his sadness regarding the false sense of security that the unfortunate woman seemed to have. So in Gramen, with the Yerushalayim Ratun, he told the story of the woman, remembering what the woman said, deeply emotional, to the old man. He says, "I am young, and the apartment belongs to me." And what the old man said first, So he said as follows. I'll set in Yiddish just the two lines. That was the punchline of the Gramen. And Rabbi Cheskel says, by the way, it's a sobering thought for the haughty and the careless. And he said as follows. Say it in Yiddish, and then I'll tell it to you in English. He says, Zaynisht azoy heis. Now this person gets heated up. Zaynisht azoy heis, Zaynisht, Zay a bissel kelter. Well, a mensch weiß nicht, wer ist jünger und wer ist älter. He said, don't be so hot, let your temper turn cold, because a man doesn't know who's young and who's old. These are the messages that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends. When Yoni says, Yivoser, we become chastised, there's so many things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends as messages, and a Shemaim to begin to do the right thing. Hopefully we're able to read a little bit of our messages, and thereby be protected from harm, and only have Brocha and Simcha in our life.